This is Make It Mentionable. I'm Alyssa Patmos, and this is the show about being human in a world that encourages us to be robots. I invite you to join me as we journey through the mess, the magic, and the mania in between, because what we can talk about, we can manage. This honest conversation extravaganza includes free-flowing conversations and high doses of vulnerability to remind you that you aren't alone. No topic is off limits, and episodes are designed to leave you smarter, aka more self-aware, than when you came. I am so glad you're here. Welcome to Make It Mentionable. I am here with Emily Majeski, and I'm super excited that Emily is here with us today because she was around when Make It Mentionable was the summit before it became the show that it is today. And we are talking about all things home. So Emily, thank you for being here with me.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So this conversation is so timely because I just moved. And so everything home oriented and creating a home is top of mind for me. So I love that we get to talk about people's environments because
yes, I think it's top of mind for most everyone since the pandemic in particular. I mean, on the one hand, the pandemic seems like such a pause on life, but it has accelerated so many other things, including people's appreciation for their living environments. So it's been a blessing to my line of work in that regard because people's appreciation has just gone through the roof, so to speak.
So along those lines then, what does home mean to you? All of us have, I feel like, a different orientation. There's the difference between house and home. And, you know, then the sayings, home is where the heart is. So as someone in this industry who's built a career around this concept of home, what does it mean to you?
Yes. So home is a very loaded word, and it does have different meanings to different people. And I have a very specific interpretation of home as it relates to my work. And that would be thinking of home as a body, as an extension of our bodies. And we as the inhabitants are ensouling this body. And so the lifestyles that we create within our homes actually represent a kind of metabolism to that body. And so the body of our home, it is something that forms like a second skin between us and the elements. And it's really important that we think of it in a holistic kind of living organism sort of way.
So I cannot, sometimes, you know, the universe is just wild. There are synchronicities of things that just pop up. So two things have popped up today related to this conversation. So one I was telling you about before we started recording, which is, before the show, I like to pull a tarot card, just ask what's something that I can remember for the interview. And so I pulled a card that was all about home and stability. But I also happened to be listening to another podcast this morning, and his name is Drew. And I'm sorry, I'm going to have to link it in the show notes because I can't remember his last name right now, or I would butcher it. But he's a wellness podcaster, and he had a guest on who was talking about how our immune system is connected to everything. It influences all the cells in our body, and our environment influences that incredibly too. And so it's not just this internal working, it's this whole body process. And so when you're talking about the home as an integral part of that, I think that's massively underrated. I don't think that's something that people are mentioning as often.
Yes, it's slowly starting to gain traction in the mainstream. In fact, there's a whole category now of medicine called environmental medicine and how our environments affect us. And I think as a people, we are evolving past a more materialistic interpretation of home. Like if you look back, a lot of people treated their homes as the place you keep your stuff while you're out buying more stuff. But society seems to be evolving in more of a quality over quantity consciousness of life and valuing minimalism and experiences over collecting material things. So our consciousness is expanding to think of home beyond its purely materialistic definition, but it is relatively new, this understanding of it as a living organism, which is largely my work.
So let's talk a little bit about that. When you say home as a living organism, I have some guesses as to what that means, but can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, absolutely. So my career has always been very obsessed with the idea or the relationship between nature and culture as this microcosm of the bigger picture of like humanity's relationship to nature. And so it's always been this interesting stage or arena for me where we can work out in our own personal microcosms what we feel those relationships should be. And so that was kind of like a positive theme ever since, honestly, I was a teenager. But as I grew and began our own home project for the first time and was like going down the research rabbit holes, that's when I really began to understand what's wrong with the building industry in terms of creating homes that are sickness affirming rather than life affirming. And when I say sickness, I mean the occupants' health being jeopardized by their homes, but also planetary health being jeopardized by our building activities. And so that actually created this catapult for us where we, my husband and myself, we have backgrounds in ceramics engineering and contracting. We started playing around in material science and created a line of products down here in Mexico that are natural building products, and such as finishes and plasters and things of that sort. And we started making these connections with our chemistry that, like, when we mimic the human body, the body chemistry, we started having better results with our product lines. So I'll give you an example of that. A lot of what we build with, like in general, like concrete, is a calcium-based formula. There's calcium, silica, alumina in it. And when we started adding magnesium to our own versions of kind of cementitious formulas, we realized, wow, magnesium has a really complementary effect with calcium, just like within our bones. Like, you'll be more likely to get osteoporosis when you're deficient in magnesium. Mm-hmm. And when you think about it, seashells are a combination of magnesium and calcium as well, because the ocean is a magnesium soup, basically. It's the third most common element. So we started making these connections that our own biochemistry could improve the performance of the materials we build with. And then taking it a step further and gaining a lot of experience with clients and installations and seeing projects that went well and that didn't go well, as an observer, I started to realize that there's even this kind of respiration or metabolism to the design and planning and building process itself. And I started to realize, like, wow, this is a living process that's living just like its own breathing entity. And it's built with nutrients and materials that mimic how our own bodies are built. And so I started thinking of the entire picture in this very, like, humanistic way. Let's put it that way.
I love that. It's fascinating. To touch on something you said at the end, and oftentimes these buildings that we're building live on even beyond us, and they're interacting with nature even longer than we are in some regards. So
I absolutely think, at least they should outlive us.
Yes, magnesium and calcium are the two powders I have in my shelf. I have them every day, so I think that
yes,
But that's so interesting how you started to build that in into the process. And so I want to come back and talk more about that. But first, I think I need to know how you became obsessed with this. Like, what is it about your essence growing up where that you were drawn to this type of work? I'm insanely curious.
Yeah, well, I guess going back to when I was 9, I inherited this epic collection of Martha Stewart magazines from a family friend, going back to her collection from 1991. And I'll admit, Martha Stewart really inspired me back in the day, even though, you know, it might seem passé in this day and age of the internet, but back in the day, she was quite pioneering and instilled in me this huge respect for home and garden as a category. And honestly, I think all of us deep down are fascinated with the idea of creating a dream home where we have our garden and we have our healthy space where we can be the best version of ourselves. And that's a very primordial dream that each and every one of us share, no matter where we are in the globe. So it's nothing unique to me. It's a very universal attraction, this whole idea of coming home and creating home and what is home and in my case, what is a healthy home and how it all ties together. So yeah, but I'll give Martha credit where credit's due.
So how did you start then expanding beyond, you know, just the home and the garden, like, you know, beyond the white picket fence, beyond, you know, this version of home in suburbia? Do you want to tell listeners and viewers, like, where you are, sort of how you got to there?
Yes. Yeah, so the last few years, we've really been in R&D hardcore with our building product line down here. And the eventual intention is to scale these natural building products up north. But in the meantime, I just started piecing together how lost people are when it comes to designing a healthy home for themselves. It's completely overwhelming. And people tend to want to outsource a lot of that process to experts who really don't know anything about them. And just seeing, unfortunately, the very high potential for things to go wrong on a very large scale financially for people. And so I began thinking, like, I need to create a course that I wish all our clients had from the get-go that could be more checklist style and cut out all the fluff. Like, this is how you build a healthy home from A to Z, and you just follow it step by step. So almost like a blueprint. And that's what I've been working on this past year. It's still a work in progress, but it was very challenging because, and continues to be in that, there's so many variables to everybody's project, like where you are in the world and what your climate is and what your regulatory situation is and what your budget is. And so it really came down to distilling, like, what are the principles that all projects have in common as a sequence of steps? And at first it was like, oh my God, this is so overwhelming. How do I even begin this? But then I started to realize and cross-verify it with our clients too, and observing their experiences, that it's like cooking, you know, like there's such an infinite variety of expressions of cuisine and cooking around the world, and including budgets and ingredients and styles and desires. But at the end of the day, there's still underlying principles that hold true no matter where you are around the world. And so I began to see, like, this is really a parallel to building, is no matter what your objectives are, or what you're trying to create, or your budget or your climate, there's nevertheless, there's these essential principles that underpin the whole process from beginning to end that you follow. And so it's been a question of mapping those out and introducing it to the world, just to give everyone a sense of empowerment in that regard.
And so when it comes to empowerment, I love how you talked about sick affirming versus life affirming. So if a house is life affirming, what's different about it? How would we know if our home is truly life affirming rather than more bent to the sick affirming lens?
Yes. Well, a big thing to me is the fact that we associate nutrition and health with what we ingest, like you are what you eat. But the reality is we receive nutrition through all of our senses, not just what's ingestible. And that nutrition includes the quality of air that you're breathing, your quality of sleep, your access to natural daylight, your thermal comfort, like all of those elements, which are multisensory, are mediated by our homes. And we need them first and foremost more urgently than even food or nutrition or supplements. Like if you're out in space, you only survive 16 seconds in space without oxygen. And so that's even more vital for our moment-to-moment survival and the quality of that oxygen than what we ingest. And so people are beginning to realize the significance of their architecture from this more quantum nutritional standpoint. And what's interesting is every single one of those forms of nutrients, whether it's sleep or oxygen or the quality of our water, they're all direct injections of energy. So, for example, if you look at pure oxygen, I mean, that's the reason why casinos are blasting oxygen all night long to energize gamblers, and why O2 shots were passed around in clubs, and why you get energized by exercise because you're getting oxygenized. And now that we're spending 90% of our time indoors as a species, we've evolved into an indoor species. The quality of air that we're ingesting and the energy we get from that air is very determined by our home in terms of its design and the materials it's made of. And for example, like a lot of people aren't aware that we're literally breathing about 2,000 gallons of air every day. And that's about the size of a swimming pool. And so when that air is polluted through our homes in many cases, that affects everything about your health and your potential and your personal growth, because you are literally drinking a swimming pool's amount of pollution on a daily basis. And air is particularly important, the quality of air in our homes, because going back a few decades when we started sealing our homes for greater energy efficiency, we started making homes in this very sealed, tight way, but using materials that off-gassed and had noxious chemicals and had no way to be vented out. And so that caused this whole rise in sick building syndrome, where according to the UN, about 33% of buildings around the world are contaminated with mold and mildew and noxious chemicals because of this kind of fork in the road construction wise, as well as the introduction of so much synthetic stuff. So that's just one example.
So I love this conversation of how our homes, how our environments, the buildings that we're in can influence our personal growth. And in today's day and age, you know, we think of self-help. You go to the bookstore and there's an entire wall, maybe multiple walls of self-help books on display. And it becomes this very intellectual activity where it's like, okay, there is something I don't like. I got to go fix it. And let me pick up a book or maybe 10, maybe 20, and I'm going to power through. I'm going to power through trying to fix myself in this way. And it becomes a very intellectual activity. On top of that, we live in a society where we're not always ingesting the best food. And so we're distracting and muddying up the picture with sugars, you know, with unhealthy processed food, different oils. And then on top of that, now you're telling me we live in these buildings that are polluting our body as well. And so the signals that our body would give us to help us work through some of these things we want to address so that we can grow and step into our highest version of self, there's no way we can get in touch with the signals if we don't know.
Oh, that's so true. It's the whole everyone being sick and tired of feeling sick and tired all the time, but that becoming your baseline for normal. That's the real tragedy there.
So as someone starts to evaluate their environment more, like to you, what is the tie between being intentional about our environment and how we can get to our most authentic self? Like that's the whole reason behind Make It Mentionable. A lot of it is to make things conscious, to be able to bring them to the surface. So how does being intentional about our environment help us on some of these personal growth missions that so many of us find ourselves on?
Absolutely. Well, there are many answers and angles to answer that question, but I'm just going to focus on one of them.
Okay.
Design really needs to be very focused on our actual behaviors, as well as the habits we wish to welcome into our life to evolve into the person we want to be. And so when you really inventory what your behaviors are, you'll notice, and I did this to myself and was quite shocked, but it's the old 20-80 rule or 80-20 rule. Like about 20% of the routines that you have make up 80% of your life. And when you really start analyzing what those 20% of your routines are that you do day in and day out, and that really shape the patterns of your life that make you you, you start to realize, like when you're looking at it critically and mindfully and intentionally, that we do end up putting a lot of friction in our environments that cause complications and stress around these routines, often very unintentionally, but we don't even notice. And I'll give you an example of that. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's say that you have a mom with several kids and she's entering her house with the day's shopping and there's not any kind of an overhang. So if it's raining, they're all getting wet as they unlock the door. So at this moment in time, there's this bottleneck that's occurring where you have perhaps unfavorable elements like the rain. You have all the kids trying to pile in and take off their shoes. You have nowhere to put the shopping. You have a dog greeting you coming from the opposite angle, trying to get out. And then perhaps there's a mail slot with this layer of slippery mail on the floor in the inside. And this one little moment, this one routine of entering our home, which happens day in and day out that we don't even notice it, is pure chaos. And it's not until you really analyze it objectively and you start diagnosing like how this single routine that affects us day in and day out can be made joyful and easy by the design of the environment to accommodate this routine and this action. It just perpetuates year in and year out through inertia, basically, because we're not being mindful. And I mean, this can go down to the smallest detail of our lives. And I noticed it with myself recently in that we use a small gas stove in our kitchen. We're down here in tropical Mexico, and I need to use a lighter to start this stove. And for literally years on end, I've kept my lighters in a glass jar next to the stove. Simple enough, mm-hmm. until I realized a few weeks ago, like, you know, it's actually very aggravating trying to fish in this deep jar for my lighter. Why don't I have my lighters in a shallow dish where they're right there? And I swapped out the jar for a shallow dish. And now instead of having this barely noticeable cortisol rush groping around for a lighter, I get an endorphin rush of being able to scoop it up right there. And so the chemical dialogue that's occurring with your environment changes from a stress-based chemical dialogue to an endorphin-based chemical dialogue when you are mindful and you make adjustments that make life easier and friction-free, particularly with the routines that you do day in and day out.
And that small tweak in decreasing the stress response also ends up influencing our immune system. That was in the podcast that I was telling you about earlier as well. Like all of these things are interconnected, but we live on the surface so often.
Exactly.
And so like even when you were giving the first example about the entryway and someone coming in, I've had a very real life example of that. I went to help a family one time and they were going through a hard time, and the entryway was a huge deal. The husband, he came home at the end of a long day, and there was just clutter immediately when he walked in the house in this one section. The rest beyond there wasn't as bad, but in that one section, it was terrible, and it instantly set the tone. And
exactly.
And those subconscious things, like, and sometimes we're not even aware of it until we're very aware of it because something is sending us a message, then it has a ripple effect into the family dynamics for the rest Absolutely. Of the night. How you greet your kids when you come in, all of these small things.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's so many self-help programs and products and services being sold to help you expand your wealth or to improve your relationships or to, you know, keep you healthy or get you healthy. But the home is what ties all this together. The home has such a profound impact on our relationships, on our health, and our wealth potential when you add it all together. I mean, just the simple, we were talking about quantum nutrients, just the simple fact of how reliant we are on sleep, and a third of our lives being dedicated to sleep, that's 33%. That alone has such an enormous bearing on the impact we can make on this world, as well as our income potential, because obviously you're not even close to the best version of yourself when you're sleep deprived, as most people can attest.
And I think the thing that you're really highlighting throughout all of this, the undertone that I'm, you know, just majorly obsessed with, is is the power of choice. Because when we give our choice away, or when we give our choice away to someone else who has designed something for us, then inherently we're in this position where we're at the effect of our environment, we're at the effect of our surroundings and our behaviors. And so the simple choice of moving the lighter to a dish that brings you more joy, the ripple effect of that, I mean, it sounds so trivial, but the ripple effect of that is what is it? What is even the word? Is great. I'm going to say it's
enormous.
We moved in. And the one thing I love about the buildings here is that the kitchens face out. So the stove faces the living room, and it faces a whole bunch of windows where I can see the mountains. And most of the time they have ovens and stoves tucked into the wall where you're just staring at a wall. And for me, being able to have this island counter where the stove is there, I can look out. I have spices in my left drawer. I have the spatulas on the right side. Everything is right there that I need. And I can converse and have a conversation with someone while I'm doing this thing I deeply love, but that can be very isolating at times, is so wonderful. And it just highlights some of the intention that I think you talk about when people have the ultimate choice in starting a home from scratch.
Exactly. It's really transformative. And, I definitely take the stance that designing your ideal home requires a total deep dive into who you are as a person, as well as your design partner, if you're in a partnership, but who you were and who you are now and who you want to become, because we're all evolving no matter what. Time's going by, you're going to evolve into something. So if you want to have any mindfulness into what that direction is, it really requires like a high degree of soul searching as well as analysis to determine what you want to welcome into your life as you approach a home project. And just that layer alone of your personal truths and who you were and are becoming, that is something that a typical design process is completely devoid of. And people expecting a total stranger professional to look at a Pinterest board and know who they are and what they want is just so off base. Or at least it really inhibits the potential of what your home could be.
Yes. I totally agree with you. And if we think about, even, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, we have, you know, the physiological needs, safety and security at the bottom. And so traditionally a shelter, a home is what we associate with that safety need, but there's also emotional safety. And There are buildings that don't feel safe to people based on, you know, the layout of how they're organized. The furniture that's in there sometimes has an impact on how people feel. And so when we're talking about a home, which is inherently, you know, this place that is supposed to provide us safety, if we're not looking at the things from the past and baking that in of around, like, what actually, when did you feel the safest? What helps you feel safe? The home has such a, because the home, when it's designed intentionally, or when you're being mindful about it, has the potential to be this really safe space. It's also a place, I would imagine, where we can collect new evidence safely. And what I mean by that is anytime we're trying to choose transformation with change, we have to collect new evidence of doing behaviors differently. And the home could be the safest place to do that because no one can see behind the closed doors.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm perpetually shocked at how many design trends are just proliferate on the internet that when you actually look at them critically, just are such horrendous choices, in my opinion. And an example of that would be the trend, you see it all over Instagram, of doing rooms and whole homes often in like 50 shades of white and cream, and having children, for example, where everyone's like, talk about walking on eggshells constantly about making a mess or staining. Eggshell white, you know, you're walking on eggshells and everything's eggshell. But particularly what that does psychologically to children in that environment and how inhibiting that is. Or these like modern open floor plans where there's zero privacy and there's zero nooks and crannies, and it's just a total fishbowl life. Like, how do you feel safe in that?
We have to talk about this because that is one of the reasons Jeff and I moved. So when I moved in with him to his last condo, and, you know, he was a single guy at the time. It was perfect for him. It's a very open floor plan. There was no door to the bedroom. So there was a door to the bathroom and a door to the entryway and a door to the closet. And me moving into his space, like, we were able to fit our things, but I was working from the couch or the closet. I think the first time we met, I might have taken off the call from the closet because I can't be in a fishbowl. I need enclosed space.
No, very few people can. And that's a perfect example of architecture needing to provide, or I should say, respect choice and personal agency. There is a time and a place for all things. There's a time and a space to be expansive and social, and there's a time to be enclosed and to retreat and to be an individual. And so it's so important for architecture to accommodate this spectrum of human needs, because we're rarely all the way one way. And so to have a floor plan that, like, basically straitjackets you to be a certain way when you're not always feeling it is very psychologically restrictive in ways that we often don't even notice, mm-hmm. but it's very real.
One thing that keeps popping up in the back of my mind, so I'm going to listen to it, is, did you mention the phrase quantum nutrients earlier?
I did. Yes. I know the word quantum is bouncing around these days, but I was saying it before, it was cool.
I'm very curious because the word is so popular right now. So what does quantum nutrients mean?
So quantum nutrients, you have the big nutrients, in my opinion, not my opinion, for all of us biologically, it would be oxygen, thermal comfort, water and rest. And what's the fifth one? oxygen, thermal, water, rest, and lastly, your oral nutrition, which comes last. And I consider those like the macronutrients. And the home is basically the pharmacy that's distributing those nutrients to you. It's the home that is providing your access or being a barrier to your natural light, like daylighting factors, to the quality of your air, to the quality of your rest, to the quality of your soundscape, all of that. Mm-hmm. And then there's the micro quantum nutrients, which are the nourishment we receive from things like the beauty of our home and the meaningfulness of how we create, how we arrange our home. So those would be also very important nutrients on a quantum level. But you know, the basics are things like your rest and your air quality and your daylight access. And the daylight is such a huge thing. That's one of the most, I mean, you mentioned it with your kitchen example, like, we associate photosynthesis with the plant kingdom, and Homo sapiens doesn't photosynthesize. We're so above that, but it's not true at all. Like, we are totally photosynthesizing beings, because just like plants take light energy and convert it into chemical energy, our endocrine systems and our hormones are 100% triggered by light. Mm-hmm. Like, light is information. It's a particle and a wave. And the natural light cycles, as well as darkness cycles, are what trigger everything in us, from, you know, our hormones, our mineral synthesis, our nitric oxide synthesis, our fasting versus digesting cycles. It's all connected to light, sleep and wake cycles. And so our bodies are constantly taking light energy and through our hormones, converting them into chemical energy and our entire physiology. And so, so much architecture and offices, home offices in particular, are cut off from access to natural light, which is a great tragedy, because our homes tend to be oriented towards streets. Mm-hmm. And the almighty car for US culture, it's all about streets and garages, but they need to be oriented towards the sun, just like all living things, because they are alive as well, if we look at it the right way.
The sun sets right outside my office window here, and I'm obsessed with it. So I just have to ask then, so like, what are your thoughts on blackout curtains?
Yes. Well, when you there are times in the daily cycle, your 24-hour diurnal cycle, where you need darkness, true darkness, unpolluted darkness. Mm-hmm. So light and darkness are both incredibly important, and blackout curtains are very, very important. Yeah, there's many layers to this. So you want unadulterated natural light and unadulterated darkness.
The nuance. It's all the nuance. One thing that I definitely want to make sure that people hear from you, because I think this is so fascinating about your process. When you and I were first talking, we talked about how so much of the design process is visual. And you've mentioned it a few times that we have so many other sensors. We have our five senses, but we have so many other sensors too. And people, when we're so focused on the visual aspect of design, and in general, many of us focus on the visual component in general. Like, how many people do you hear saying, oh, I'm a visual learner, I have to see it? Like, we put a lot of bias on our eyes. And so in our conversation, you were talking about how you don't actually let your clients involve that in the beginning. And so can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, definitely. Well, our society has evolved, and by society, I mean whole civilization, towards a major bias towards visual mediums and an ocular bias in general, to the near total exclusion of our other senses. And there's so many examples of this. I mean, of course, we're the addiction to screen time and participating in the world through our screens is the latest version of this phenomenon, but it's been a trend for a long time. But I mean, from every angle, like even the food we tend to buy at the supermarket, you have an apple which looks beautiful and it was bred to be beautiful, and yet it has no flavor or nutrition, or it's marinated in chemicals. But all of that is secondary to it needing to look good, even though it's the proverbial poison apple. And there's so much of that has infected the design process as well. And it's actually quite amusing, because the way I think of creating a home, it's very oriented around the qualities and the feelings that you wish to cultivate there, to generate there, as well as accommodating your behaviors and your activities. So your emotions and your behaviors, they're these very ephemeral, in a sense, invisible things. Mm-hmm. And yet when we look at architecture and design, all we think of is the stuff, the interior design images, the Instagram, the architectural magazines. But when, and they're completely devoid of any trace of human activity or human presence, which is the point of it all. Mm-hmm. And so when you think of the home as a body and the occupant as ensouling this body, mm-hmm. And then you contrast that with looking at an architectural magazine where it's just these glossy still lifes of empty homes, to me, it strikes me almost like looking at cadavers, because the home is devoid of life. It's been sanitized, stripped clean. If the occupants, for example, had any personal relics or religious things up, it gets stripped out by the photography team. And it's made to be presented like humans are an afterthought. But humans are the reason for this structure's existence. And this structure is there to encapsulate human emotion and human behaviors, not things. And so you contrast that with just the endless waiting of pretty pictures that people just like are treading water in these pretty pictures. And none of it actually has much to do with creating a sense of home. Like home, of course, things contribute to home, but things are not the essence of home. You know, the essence of home is how you feel there and what you do there. So yes, I try to keep pictures out of the mix until the end of our process, because the beginning is very focused on, again, this deep dive into who you are and who you were and who you're becoming. What are the emotion, like what's the emotional climate each room needs to support? What are the behaviors that need to support, to be supported architecturally? And then you start to gradually move into the material sphere. Okay, what are the objects that contribute to the emotions and the behaviors? What type of architecture can enhance these objects and the emotions and the behavior? So it's this triangulation that has to occur that then is encapsulated by the architecture. But the visible side is at the tail end of a very invisible kind of exploration.
I think that's so powerful and beautiful that you guide people through that process then, because similarly to it can be hard to be guided back to ourselves. That's a lot of the work that I do with people. And similarly, being able to do that for yourself in a home can be difficult too. I'm constantly teaching about how, you know, our reality is based off of our perception and the internal representations that we make. And similarly, that's based off of our senses and our sensors, our past experiences. And in the visual world we live in, when, you know, there's print magazines everywhere, there's Instagram, Facebook, social, you take in everybody else's images all the time, that it really starts to muddy. I see this over and over and over again in my clients. It starts to muddy them actually knowing what they truly want. And so even if you're purchasing a home, and I know you work with people from building it from the ground up, And if they're purchasing or if they're building it from the ground up, that same bias can come in where it's like, wait, is this actually what you want? Does this actually support your life? Or is this just what you've seen? Is this just what's trending? And how is that subconsciously or unconsciously rather getting baked into how you're making decisions throughout this process? So this journey of reflection and guidance into no, like who have you been? Who are you? Who are you becoming? Become so powerful.
Absolutely. And you are the expert on you. There's no engineer or architect or builder who can fill that information in for you. Like, you have to start with your own expertise on yourself. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that is such a huge phenomenon culturally, where we're just, it's almost like a form of forced consumption of everybody else's choices and lifestyles and whatever they wish to portray to the world. And I know you bring this up with your business coaching a lot, of like, it doesn't matter what the gurus are telling you to do. Like, what's your vision for your business and for your lifestyle? And like, what are your ethics and your line in the sand, and how to design around your priorities as opposed to what all these billions of talking heads are telling you to do. And that definitely carries through into the world of home creation. Like, you almost need to detox from looking at any of those images or what anybody else is saying to like get back to the essence of what you want, because it's very difficult to find that internal space when you're just being barraged constantly by what everybody else is doing.
Yeah, that's even been interesting for Jeff and I recently, because we're merging two different styles of furniture. And so we have more traditional heavy pieces. And then I mean, you can't see my desk, but it's an acrylic desk. It's completely clear and see-through, and I love it. So when you are trying to merge two styles, though, and you're just seeing pictures of the rules being one way, it can be hard to employ your true creative brain and tap into, okay, wait, how does this feel? Like, how does this wood feel to me right now? Because I'm used to seeing very modern and contemporary things, but I actually love the richness and the story that's behind this, and the fact that it is more natural. And that leads me to one other point I wanted to bring up. And it goes back to what we were talking about with being distracted by the things that we put in our bodies, the things around us. But one of the things that people come to me very often, they end up saying in some course of our conversation, my body hates me. Like, how many times do you have women friends, especially, who are like, my body hates me, and they pit it as like, it's my body against me. And so we often reframe that into, your body is an excellent communicator. And we aren't taught that. We're not taught to pay attention to the signals that our body gives off. And that's why so many times, you know, people end up going to doctor after doctor after doctor, and then they're just looking at the environmental conditions last. And we're not as great at tuning into these signals that our body gives off unless we start to get really intentional about it. And what I'm hearing you say is that our home and the home building process can really start to support and reinforce not only us sort of being the soul and like truly embodying the home, but also our home being a place that can support our bodies in ways that we don't even realize.
Yes. I mean, it literally is an extension of the body in every way. Like, I've gotten to the point where I think there's two kinds of architects. There's the architect that knows they are basically a doctor prescribing you medicine through how they design your home. And there's architects that don't know they're doctors. I mean, it's really that important. And it does take a rewiring. And I completely agree with what you're saying. I mean, our whole society is based around treating symptoms in general, because that's what keeps capitalism grinding forward. Yes. And, you know, God forbid we get to the root cause of anything. And so, it permeates every aspect of life. And it's really up to us to snap out of it and take responsibility to a certain extent.
So how do we, you know, I have two questions. So do you end up being like a marriage counselor then when working with clients? How do you?
All right. Well,
the needs of different people.
Yes. The the focus of our business has been on finishes. So in most cases, we enter into the construction scene at the tail end of the process, which is what highlighted for me the need to get in at the beginning, because people were just like lost lambs wandering up to the home stretch. And it's like, wow, if only there was some way to just get everyone a good foundation from the get-go, even though that's not my company's role. But yes, of course, going things about co-creating a home with a partner is next level, of course. There's lots of money at stake. There's always lots of time, money, resources at stake. It doesn't matter whether you have a small budget or a big budget. Whatever you allocate to spend on your home will be a lot of money to you, no matter what echelon you're at. And then you're entering into this minefield of very emotion-laden terms, such as home, what home means to you, what home means to your partner, nostalgia, images for their future, you know, your idea of success and advancing through life is all wrapped up in the home you find yourself in. So I do actually... The course I'm working on is in the beta phase right now. It's chugging away at it, but there is definitely a very important section on co-design with a partner, because there's a lot of things that you need to flesh out at the beginning. And if you do it the right way, it can just bring you closer together, because this personal journey you're on, you're sharing with a partner, you know? And I honestly try to design all of my content in a very androgynous way, because it's important that it appeals to both genders, and that I'm weaving together more journaling and imaginatory exercises with more analytical kind of checklisty, very rational exercises. Not saying one gender is more oriented than the other one way or the other at all. We both have twin needs, no matter who we are, to be rational and to be imaginative. It's super important. But when you can do that together in a guided way as a couple, that is so powerful, because the last thing you want is a home that brings you to the verge of a breakup, as opposed to being just the ultimate thing to participate in together that just affects your quality of life together in every way. So yeah, it does take some finesse. And guidance helps for sure. Having a neutral third party to kind of set the parameters for the experience. Mm-hmm.
So when someone is, so I love living downtown. I love living in a city. So it's very unlikely that I will end up building a home from scratch in the middle of downtown Denver. However, we had talked about some of this before I moved in. And so I've been thinking about it, and there are still so many choices that someone can make, regardless of if they're starting from scratch or if they're, you know, switching things up and wanting to be more intentional and more mindful about it now. So do you have any tips for people listening or watching who want to design an environment that protects them from overwhelm, that protects them from, you know, a lot of sick affirming energy, and to help it be this more life affirming, you can tell me if you don't agree with this, but like grounding force that supports them being able to go forth and present their best self to the world?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, my endeavors has been focused on building from scratch, because that's its own unique category compared to refurbishing or renovating. But I will say in that regard, the number one starting point towards creating a healthy space needs to be your bedroom. Because your bedroom, even if you siloed that off as a phase one and just focused exclusively on that, your bedroom is where your guard is let down entirely and your body heals itself. And you're literally, your body is sending out electrical pulses all night long and is self-moderating and regulating itself and healing through its electrical pulsations. And so to create a safe space that doesn't have volatile organic compounds, isn't off-gassing, has high quality materials, isn't barraging you with electromagnetic pollution while you're healing, and just eliminating interference with your healing process, not to mention focusing on it from a couple's standpoint, but really from a health standpoint as well. Just that would be the place to begin, in my opinion. And then as far as, you know, eliminating overwhelm as much as possible, I would say the first step to that is really defining what your priorities are and why your priorities are your priorities, and identifying what actions you need to take that are most efficient towards reaching those priorities and accomplishing them. And then once you've done that internal work, that's when you can configure the space around those priorities. But you have to really be clear with yourself and come to certain conclusions of like, what's not working, what's just busy work, what is contributing to overwhelm that is not actually helping me achieve my goals. Like, you have to do that internal investigation first. And then once you've identified what those priorities are, what the actions are, what why these are so vital to your goals, like, that's when you start the design process, not before that. Mm-hmm. And I think it's also very important in your space that you acknowledge within the space what you've accomplished, not just what you're trying to accomplish. Because we tend to be in this very futuristic intellectual realm all the time of we don't even like appreciate and celebrate what we've done. And we're just in this futuristic headspace and feeling like we're in catch-up mode all the time without honoring what we have done within our spaces. So I think that's also very important to do. And lastly, we have to recognize, particularly if you're talking office space or like a productive space in your home, which tends to, you know, have overwhelm associated with it. We have to recognize that we have an expansive as well as a contractive side to our minds. Mm. Our imaginations, which tend to be future oriented and, you know, oriented towards possibilities, that's the expansion, that's the exhalation. And then our reason and our rationale and our logic, which tends to be grounded in patterns from the past and experiences we've witnessed or had, that tends to be contractive, like an inhalation. And so I believe office spaces need to be designed in such a way where our imagination is accommodated and our reason is also accommodated. And it's almost like, almost to the point where you have one wall is all bulletin board for just freestyling and mood boarding. And you have like another wall where it's like your computer and it's very analytical and you switch hats back and forth and change it up, because we can't be too much of one way all the time. It's important that we allow both those sides of our mind to blossom in order to cut through the overwhelm.
I think two things you said really jumped out to me personally, just from what I experience with people too. And one of them is definitely recognizing what you've done in a space, because people forget all the time their accomplishments and just jump on to the next thing, always trying to fix the next thing, back to what we were talking about earlier. And that's so, so, so important, because that shows us a lot of what's important to us, because it shows us what actions we were willing to take. And one thing I would add, just from the work I do, on top of people really doing the inner work to know, okay, what does this home need to serve for me, is asking the simple question, what, in the context of home, what does home mean to me? And going through and dumping out the bucket, writing that list until nothing will come anymore, and then ranking it, and then going through and looking at some of those behaviors that you're doing and seeing if they support that, seeing if your space is supporting some of those things. And then secondly, what were we just talking about at the end? It's going to come back to me.
As far as the office design goes.
I was going to tell you, I actually know someone, I think his name I don't know him personally. I know of someone. I think his name is Austin Kleon. I think that's who I'm thinking of. He is an artist and he has three books out. Show Your Work is one of them and Steal Like an Artist. But I think I read, it was his blog I was reading where he actually does have two separate spaces. He has the space where he types and writes, and then he has a separate desk that's on a different wall for the creative, intentional time. And I know that's in my beautiful. Own process, when I'm writing my newsletters, I've switched over to this more recently. I write them in my notebook first because that's just where it comes easier to me. And even though it's less efficient, I then transfer it to my laptop because otherwise it doesn't come as easy. So it's taking these micro things that we know to be true in one area and then magnifying it into this beautiful way where we're not forcing it in our environment. It becomes our environment. And I love
absolutely.
That.
And it's another example of your environment being designed to create this buffet of options for, you know, it's not funneling you to be a certain person or a certain way. Like you can indulge in the different sides of your personality and your working styles. And so that's where like the real intentionality comes in to designing an office in particular, because it's like, all right, what lights me up? When do I tend to be inspired? How often can I slog away, or for how long can I slog away at something before I need to just, you know, switch tracks and change it up? And like, yeah, just having that deep awareness, and then being able to create the environment that accommodates that, not just what we're looking at online. It's like, this is the classic, this is the anatomy of an office and what you need. It's like, no, set all that aside and like really look inward first before you look outward.
This conversation has been so beautiful. And before we tell people where they can find you, where they can connect with you if they want to, I would love to just ask you, because this is Make It Mentionable, is there anything that you feel like we didn't mention that would be the thing that you would wake up in the middle of the night and be like, oh, I wish I had said that? Is there anything that you feel like needs to be mentioned right now around this topic?
Yeah. It's the fact that we shape our homes first and then our homes shape us. Mm-hmm. And our homes and our environments have such a profound effect on who we evolve into. And that's one of the biggest reasons why designing your home is personal work, and it's not something you can expect anybody else to do for you, because you're taking such a profound influence on your quality of life, on the quality of your relationships, on who your children grow up to be and who you become. And that's not something you can delegate, especially to a collection of strangers. And so really doing that prep work ahead of any kind of building project where you turn inward and you block out all the noise. And that's the first step. It's definitely not looking at pictures on social media. It's looking at yourself and to acknowledge like the profound impact our environments have, which is not a very popular idea because we always like to think of ourselves as pulling ourselves up by our own bootstraps and just everything coming from within. But it's really a balance of influence, like external influences as well as internal. And we need to give that the credit it's due.
And there's a lot of hope in that too, because then it means that it's not just something that we have to force our way through. Some of the small tweaks, even that you've mentioned in here, can start to shift and let us sink back into our bodies, can let us sink into and be supported by our environment and not have to force change in all these other areas or solely intellectually as much. So that sounds even more easeful to me, which is great.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So if people want to connect with you, what should they do? Where can they find you?
So the course that we're working on is called Embodied Home Design. So that can be found at embodiedhomedesign.com. Okay. Now I think you'd have a better understanding of why the focus of the term embodiment, because our homes are a second body to us. So it's all about creating an environment that truly embodies the best version of ourselves. And as far as our materials atelier down here in Mexico, that's at phytostone.com. We focus on local projects only, but you can see some of our work and some of these human body biochemistry inspired formulas that we've been developing for years now. That can be found at phytostone.com.
Awesome. And I will link all of those in the show notes so that they are easy for you to get to. Emily, this has been such a joy. Thank you so much for being here and having this conversation. It's something that needs to be baked into how we talk about building, how we talk about purchasing, how we talk about enjoying our spaces. Thank you so much.
Likewise, Alyssa. Thanks for all the work you do too.
You've just finished listening to another episode of Make It Mentionable with me, your host, Alyssa Patmos. If you're looking for more in-between episodes, then sign up for The Peel. It's my free newsletter that gives tips for how to navigate whatever life dishes. And it's also the place where I share the juiciest of stories. To check it out, head on over to alyssapatmos.com/The Peel. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I'll see you next time.